Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sanitary Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is February 9, 2017, hours 8, hours 13, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, The Solid Rock. My hope is built on nothingness, in Yeshua's blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest friend, but wholly lean on Yeshua's name. On Yeshua the solid rock I stand, all of the ground is sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. When darkness seems to hide his face, I rest on his unchanging grace. And every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil. On the yes for the solid rock I stand, all of the ground is sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. His oath is covenant, his blood, support me in the whelming flood. When all around my soul gives way, he then is all my hope and stay. On the ice of the solid rock I stand, all of the ground is sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. When he shall come with trumpet sound, oh, may I then in him be found. Fixed in his righteousness alone, faultless to stand before the throne. On Yash of the solid rock I stand, all of the ground is sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. Part 5, Prophets in Chains. We're on Captivity and Restoration. National Apostasy, page 8, chapter 8, page 109. Okay, it says, from the time of the Jeroboam's death unto Elijah's appearance before the Ahab, the people of Israel suffered a steady spiritual decline, ruled by men who did not fear the Yahweh and who encouraged strange forms of worship. The larger number of the people rapidly lost sight of their duty to serve the living Elohim and adopted many of the practices of the idolatry. Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, occupied the throne of Israel for only a few months. His career of evil was suddenly stopped by a conspiracy headed by the Baasha, one of his generals, to gain control of the government. Nadab was slain with all his kindred and in the line of succession, according unto the saying of the Yahweh, which he spake by his servant Ahijah, the Shilonite, because of the sins of Jeroboam, which he sinned and which he made Israel sin. 1 Kings 15:29-30. Thus perished the house of Jeroboam. The idolatrous worship introduced by him had brought upon the guilty offenders the retributive judgments of the heaven, and yet the rulers who followed Baasha, Elah, Zimri, and Omri during a period of nearly 40 years continued in the same fatal course of the evildoing. During the greater part of this time of the apostasy in Israel, Asa was ruling in the kingdom of Judah. for many years. I also did that which was good and right in the eyes of the Yahweh and his Elohim, for he took away the altars of the strange gods and the high places, and break down the images, and cut down the groves, and commanded Judah to seek the Yahweh Elohim of their fathers, and to do the law and commandments. Also it took away out of all the cities of Judah the high places and the sun images, and the kingdom was quiet before him. 2 Chronicles 14:2-5. For the faith of the Asa was put unto a severe test, and Azirah the Ethiopian, with a host of 1,000,000 and 300 chariots, invaded his kingdom. Verse 9. In this crisis, Asa did not put his trust in the fenced cities in Judah that he had built with walls and towers, gates and bars, nor in the mighty men of valor and his carefully trained army. Verses 6-8. The king's trust was in the Yahweh of the host, in whose name marvelous deliverances had been wrought on behalf of Israel of old. Seeing his forces in the battle array, he sought the help of Yahweh. The opposing armies now stood face to face. It was a time of test and trial, and under those who served the Yahweh, had every sin been confessed, had the men of Judah full confidence in the Elohim's power to deliver, such thoughts as these were in the minds of the leader. From every human viewpoint, the vast host from Egypt would sweep everything before it. But in the time of the peace, Asa had not been giving himself unto amusement and pleasure. He had been preparing for an emergency. He had an army trained for the conflict. He had endeavored to lead his people to make their peace with the Yahweh, and now, although his forces were fewer in number than the enemy, his faith in the one whom he had made his trust did not weaken. Having sought the Yahweh in the days of prosperity, the king could only rely upon him in the day of adversity. His petition showed that he was not a stranger to Yahweh's wonderful power. It is nothing with thee to help, he pleaded, whether with many or with them that have no power. Help us, O Yahweh Elohim, for we rest on thee, and in thy name we go against this multitude, O Yahweh. Thou art our Elohim. Let not man prevail against thee. Verse 11. For the prayer of Asa is one that every Christian believer may fittingly offer. We fight in a warfare not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, and against the spiritual wickedness in high places. See Ephesians 6:12. In life's conflict, we must meet evil agencies that have arrayed themselves against the right. Our hope is not in man, but in the living Elohim, with the full assurance of our faith. We may expect that he will unite his omnipotence with the efforts of the human instrumentalities for the glory of his name. Clad with the armor of the righteousness, we may gain the victory over every foe. King Asa's faith was signally rewarded. The Yahweh smote the Ethiopian before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled, and Asa and the people that were with him pursued them under Gerar, and the Ethiopians were overthrown, that they could not recover themselves. For they were destroyed before the Yahweh and before his host. 2 Chronicles 14:12-13. As the victorious armies of Judah and Benjamin were returning to Jerusalem, the Spirit of Yahweh came upon Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa and said unto him, Hear ye me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. Yahweh is with you, while ye be with him. And if You seek him, he will be found of you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. Be ye strong, therefore, and let not your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. 2 Chronicles 15:1-7. Greatly encouraged by these words, Asa soon led out in a second reformation in Judah. He put away the abominable idols out of all the land of Judah and Benjamin, and out of the cities which he had taken from Mount Ephraim, and renewed the altar of Yahweh that was before the porch of the Yahweh. And he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and the strangers with them out of Ephraim and Manasseh and out of Simcon, for they fell on him out of Israel in abundance. And when they saw that the Yahweh's Elohim was with him, so they gathered themselves together at Jerusalem in the third month, in the 15th day of the reign of Asa. And they offered unto the Yahweh the same time of the spoil, which they had brought 700 oxen and 700 sheep, and they entered into a covenant to seek the Yahweh, Elohim of their father, with all their heart and with all their soul. And he was found of them, and the Yahweh gave them rest round about, verses 8-12-15. Asa's long record of the faithful service was marred by some mistakes made at times when he failed to put his trust fully in the Yahweh. When on one occasion the king of Israel entered the kingdom of Judah and seized Ramah, a fortified city only 5 miles from Jerusalem, Asa sought deliverance by the forming an alliance with Ben-Hadad, king of Syria. This failure to trust Yahweh alone in time of the need was sternly rebuked by Hananiah, the prophet, who appeared before Asa with the message, "Because thou hast relied on the king of Assyria and not relied on Yahweh the Elohim, therefore is the host of the king of Assyria escaped out of thine hand. Were not the Ethiopians and the Lubans a huge host with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because thou didst rely on Yahweh, he delivered them into thine hand. For the eyes of Yahweh run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. Herein thou hast done foolishly, therefore from henceforth thou shalt have wars." 2 Chronicles 16:7-9. Instead of honoring himself before Yahweh because of his mistake, Asa was wroth with the seer and put him in a prison house, for he was in a rage with him because of this thing. And Asa oppressed some of the people at the same time. Verse 10. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet until his disease was exceedingly great. Yet in his disease he sought not to Yahweh, but unto the physicians. Verse 12. The king died in the 41st year of his reign and was succeeded by Jehoshaphat his son. 2 years before the death of Asa, Asa began to rule in the kingdom of Israel. From the beginning his reign was marked by a strange and terrible apostasy. Ahab. 2 years before the death of Asa, Ahab began to rule in the kingdom of Israel. From the beginning, his reign was marked by a strange and terrible apostasy. His father, Omri, the founder of Samaria, had wrought evil in the eyes of Yahweh and did worse than all that were before him. 1 Kings 16:25. But the sins of Ahab were even greater. He did more to provoke the Yahweh Elohim of Israel to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him. Okay, so in our day, then that would translate into the last prophet for the Seventh Day Adventist Church, Brother Johnson. He represented, he was the antitypical Ahab, and so therefore he had the greatest light of all the prophets since 1844, and so therefore he had the most to be responsible for, and he failed, and so he falls into the category of doing more harm for the Adventist Church than anybody before him. Okay, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Verses 33 and 31. Not content with encouraging the forms of religious service, followed at Bethel and Dan, he boldly led the people into the grossest heathenism by setting aside the worship of the Yahweh for the Baal worship. Taking the wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and high priest of the Baal, Ahab served Baal and worshipped him. And he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria, verse 31-32. Not only did Ahab introduce Baal worship at the capital city, but under the leadership of Jezebel, he erected heathen altars in many high places, where in the shelter of the surrounding groves, the priests and others connected with this seductive form of idolatry exerted their baleful influence, until well nigh all Israel were falling after Baal. There was none like unto Ahab, who did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of Yahweh, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up, and he did very abominably in falling idols, according to all things as did the Amorites, whom the Yahweh cast out before the children of Israel. 1 Kings 21:25-26. Ahab was weak in the moral power. His union by marriage with an idolatrous woman of a decided character and positive temperament resulted disastrously both unto himself and unto the nation. Unprincipled and with no high standard of the right doing, his character was easily molded by the determined spirit of Jezebel. His selfish nature was incapable of appreciating the mercy of Yahweh unto Israel and his own obligation as a guardian and leader of the chosen people. Under the blighting influence of the Ahab rule, Israel wandered far from the living Yahweh and corrupted their ways before him. For many years they had been losing their sense of the reverence and righteous fear, and now it seemed as if they were none who dared expose their lives by openly standing forth in the opposition unto the prevailing blasphemy. For the dark shadow that posse covered the whole land. Images of the Balaam and the Ashtoreth were everywhere to be seen. Idolatrous temples and consecrated groves, wherein were worshipped the works of men's hands, were multiplied. The air was polluted with the smoke of the sacrifices offered to false gods. Hill and vale resounded with the drunken cries of a heathen priesthood, who sacrificed to the sun, moon, and stars. Through the influence of Jezebel and her impious priests, the people were taught that the idol gods that had been set up were deities, ruling by their mystic power the elements of the earth, fire, and water. All the bounties of heaven, the running brooks, the streams of the living waters, the gentle dew, the showers of rain which refreshed the earth and caused the fields to bring forth abundantly, were ascribed unto the favor of the Baal and Ashtoreth, instead of the giver of the ever good and perfect gift. The people forgot that the hills and the valleys, the streams and the fountains were on the were in the hand of the living Elohim, that he controlled the sun, the clouds of heaven, and all the powers of the nature. Through faithful messengers, Yahweh sent repeated warnings unto the apostate king and the people, but in vain were these words of the reproof. In the vain did the inspired messengers assert Yahweh's right to be the only Yahweh in Israel. In vain did they exalt the laws that he had entrusted on them, captivated by the gorgeous display and the fascinating rites of the idol worship, the people followed the example of the king and his court and gave themselves up to the intoxicating, degrading pleasure of a sensual worship. And the blind and folly, they chose to worship Yahweh and his worship. The light so graciously given them had become darkness. The fine gold had become dim. Alas, how had the glory of the Israel departed? Never before had the chosen people of Elohim fallen so low in the apostasy. Of the prophets of Baal, there were 450, besides 400 prophets of the grove. 1 Kings 18:19. Nothing short of the miracle working power of Yahweh could preserve the nation from the utter destruction. Israel had voluntarily separated herself from the Yahweh, yet the Yahweh and the compassion still yearned after those who had been led into the sin, and he was almost to send unto them one of the mightiest of his prophets, through whom they were to be led back unto the allegiance unto the Yahweh of their fathers. That brings the end of chapter 8. Now we come to chapter 9, Elijah the Tishbite. Among the mountains of the Gilead, east of the Jordan, there dwelt in the days of Ahab a man of the faith and prayer, whose fearless ministry was destined to check the rapid spread of apostasy in Israel. Far removed from any city of renown and occupying no high station in life, Elijah, the Tishbite, nevertheless, entered upon his mission confident in the Yahweh's purpose to prepare the way before him and to give him abundant success. The word of faith and power was upon his lips, and his whole life was devoted to the work of the reform. His was the voice of one crying in the wilderness to rebuke sin and press back the tide of evil. And while he came to the people as a reprover of sin, his message offered the balm of Gilead unto the sin-sick souls of all who desired to be healed. As Elijah saw Israel going deeper and deeper into the idolatry, his soul was distressed and his indignation aroused. Yahweh had done great things for his people. He had delivered them from bondage and given them the lands of the heathen, that they might observe his statutes and keep his law. Psalms 105:44-45. But the beneficent designs of the Yahweh were now well nigh forgotten. unbelief was fast separating the chosen nation from the source of their strength. Viewing this apostasy from his mountain retreat, Elijah was overwhelmed with a sorrow. In anguish of the soul, he besought Yahweh to arrest the once favored people and their wicked course, to visit them with judgment, if need be, that they might be led to see in his true light their departure from the heaven. He longed to see them brought unto repentance, before they should go to such lengths in evil doing as to provoke the Yahweh had to destroy them utterly. Elijah's prayer was answered. Oft-repeated appeals, remonstrances, and warnings had failed to bring Israel to repentance. The time had come when Yahweh must speak unto them by the means of the judgment. Inasmuch as the worshippers of the Baal claimed that the treasures of the heaven, the dew and the rain, came not from the Yahweh, but from the ruling forces of the nature. And that it was through the creative energy of the sun that the earth was enriched and made to bring forth abundantly, the curse of Elohim was to rest heavily upon the polluted land. For the apostate tribes of the Israel were to be shown the folly of trusting unto the power of the Baal for the temporal blessing, until they should turn unto Yahweh with repentance and acknowledge him as the source of all blessing. they should fall upon the land neither dew nor rain. It says, unto Elijah it was entrusted the mission of the delivering unto the Ahab's heaven's message of the judgment. Okay, by the Yahweh's messenger, the word of Yahweh came unto him, and Angelus, for the honor of the Elohim's cause, he did not hesitate to obey the divine summons. Although to obey seemed to invite swift destruction at the hand of the wicked king, the prophet set out at once and traveled night and day until he reached Samaria. At the palace, he solicited no admission, nor waited to be formally announced. Clad in the coarse garments usually worn by the prophets of that time, he paused. He passed the guards apparently unnoticed and stood for a moment before the astonished king. Elijah made no apology for his abrupt appearance. A greater than the ruler of the Israel had commissioned him to speak, and lifting his hand toward heaven, he solemnly affirmed by the living Elohim that the judgments of the Most High were about to fall upon Israel. As the Yahweh Elohim of the Israel declared before him, before whom I stand, he declared, there shall not be dew nor rain these are years, but according unto my word. It was only by the exercise of the strong faith and the unfailing power of the Yahweh's word that Elijah delivered his message. Had he not possessed implicit confidence in the one whom he served, he would never have appeared before Ahab. On his way unto Samaria, Elijah had passed by ever flowing streams, hills covered with the verdure, and a stately forest that seemed beyond the reach of the drought. Everything on which the eye rested was clothed with a beauty. The prophet might have wondered how the streams had never ceased their flow, could become dry, or how those hills and valleys could be burned with the drought. But he gave none a place to the unbelief. He fully believed that the Yahweh would humble apostate Israel, and that through the judgments they would be brought to repentance. If he out of heaven had gone forth, Elohim's words did not fail, and at the peril of his life, Elijah fearlessly fulfilled his commission. Like a thunderbolt from a clear sky, the message of the impending judgment fell upon the ears of the wicked king. But before Ahab could recover from his astonishment or frame a reply, Elijah disappeared as abruptly as he had come, without waiting to witness the effect of his message. And the Yahweh went before him, making plain the way. Turn thee eastward, the prophet was bidden, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith, that is before the Jordan. So here Yahweh is out here, or it's Yahshua, actually, it's probably the son Yahshua, is right there with Elijah. That is before the Jordan, and it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed thee. The king made diligent inquiry, but the prophet was not to be found. Queen Jezebel, angered over the message that had locked up the treasures of heaven, lost no time and conferred with the priest of Baal, who united with her in the cursing of the prophet and in defying the wrath of the Yahweh. But notwithstanding their desire to find him who had uttered the word of the woe, they were destined to meet with a disappointment. Nor could they conceal from others a knowledge of the judgment pronounced and the consequence of the prevailing apostasy. Tidings of Elijah's denunciation of the sins of the Israel and of his prophecy of the swift coming judgment punishment quickly spread throughout the land, for the fears of some were aroused, but in the general, the heavenly message was received with scorn and ridicule. The prophet's words went into immediate effect. Those who were at first inclined to scoff at the thought of the calamity soon had occasion for the serious reflection, for after a few months, the earth, unrefreshed by the dew or rain, became dry and vegetation withered. As time passed, streams that had never been known to fail began to decrease and brooks began to drop. Yet the people were urged by their leaders to have confidence in the power of the Baal and to set aside the idle words of the prophecy of Elijah. The priest still insisted that it was through the power of the Baal that the showers of the rain fell. Fear not the Elohim of the Elijah, nor tremble at his word, they urged. It is Baal that bringeth forth the harvest in its season and provides for man and beast. Yahweh's message unto Ahab gave Jezebel and her priests and all the followers of Baal and Ashtoreth opportunity to test the power of their gods, and if possible, to prove the word of the Elijah false. Against the assurances of the hundreds of the idolatrous priests, the prophecy of Elijah stood alone. If notwithstanding the prophet's declaration, Baal could still give dew and rain, causing the streams to continue to flow and vegetation to flourish, then let the king of Israel worship him, and the people say that he is the Yahweh. Determined to keep the people in the deception, the priests of the Baal continue to offer sacrifice unto their gods and to call upon them night and day to refresh the earth. With costly offerings, the priests attempt to appease the anger of their gods with a zeal and a perseverance worthy of a better cause. They linger around their pagan idols and pray earnestly for rain. Night after night throughout the doomed land, their cries and entreaties arise. Let no clouds appear in the heavens by the day to hide the burning rays of the sun. No dew or rain refresh the thirsty earth. The word of the Yahweh stands unchanged by anything that the priest of the Baal can do. A year passes, and yet there is no rain. The earth is parched as if with fire. The scorching heat of the sun destroys what little vegetation has survived. Streams dry up, and lowing herds and bleeding flocks wander hither and thither in distress. Once flourishing fields have become like the burning desert sands, a desolate waste. The groves dedicated to idol worship are leafless, the forest trees, gaunt skeletons of the nature, afford no shade. The air is dry and suffocating, dust storms blind the eyes and nearly stop the breath. Once prosperous cities and villages have become places of the mourning, hunger and thirst are telling upon a man and beast with a fearful mortality. Famine with all its horrors comes closer and still closer. Yet notwithstanding these evidences of the Elohim's power, Israel repented not, nor learned the lesson that Elohim would have them learn. They did not see that he who created nature controls her laws, and can make of them instruments of the blessing or of the destruction. Proud-hearted, enamored of their false worship, they were unwilling to humble themselves under the mighty hand of the Yahweh, and they began to cast about for some other cause under which to attribute their suffering. Jezebel utterly refused to recognize the drought as a judgment from the Yahweh. Unyielding in her determination to defy the Elohim of heaven, she, with nearly the whole of the Israel, united in denouncing Elijah as the cause of all of their misery. Had he not borne testimony against their forms of worship, if only he could be put out of the way, He argued the anger of their gods would be appeased and their troubles would end. Urged on by the queen, Ahab instituted a most diligent search for the hiding place of the prophet. To the surrounding nations, far and near, he sent messengers to seek for the man whom he hated, yet feared, and in his anxiety, he made the search as thorough as possible, for he required of these kingdoms and nations an oath that they knew nothing of the whereabouts of the prophet. But the search was in vain. The prophet was safe from the malice of the king whose sins had brought upon the land of the denunciation of an offended Yahweh. Failing in her efforts against Elijah, Jezebel determined to avenge herself by the slaying all of the prophets of the Yahweh and the Israel. Not one should be left alive, for the infuriated woman carried out her purpose in the massacre of many of Yahweh's servants. Not all, however, perished. Obadiah, the governor of Ahab's house, yet faithful unto Yahweh, took them 100 prophets, and at the risk of his own life, hid them by 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water. 1 Kings 18:4. The second year of the famine passed, and still the pitiless heavens gave no sign of the rain. Drought and famine continued their devastation throughout the kingdom. Fathers and mothers, powerless to relieve the sufferings of their children, were forced to see them die. Yet still apostate Israel refused to humble their hearts before Yahweh and continued to murmur against the man by whose word these terrible judgments had been brought upon them. They seemed unable to discern in their suffering and distress a call to repentance, a divine interposition to save them from the taking the fatal step beyond the boundary of the heavens' forgiveness. The apostate Israel was an evil more dreadful than all the multiplied horrors of this famine. Yahweh was seeking to free the people from their delusion and lead them to understand their accountability unto the one unto whom they owed their life and all things. He was trying to help them to recover their lost faith, and he must needs bring upon them great affliction. Have I any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, saith Yahweh Elohim, and not that he should return from his ways and live? Cast away from you all your transgressions whereby you have transgressed, and make you a new heart and a new spirit, for why will you die, O house of Israel? For I have no pleasure in the death of him that died, saith Yahweh Elohim. Wherefore turn yourselves and live you, turn ye from your evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel? Ezekiel 18:23, 31, 32, 33, and 11. Yahweh had sent messengers unto Israel with the appeal to return unto their allegiance. Had they heeded these appeals, had they turned from the Baal unto the living Elohim, Elijah's message of the judgment would never have been given. But the warnings that might have been a savor of life unto life had proved unto them a savor of death unto death. Their pride had been wounded. Their anger had been aroused against the messenger. And now they regarded with the intense hatred the prophet Elijah. If only he should fall into their hands, gladly they would deliver him unto Jezebel. As if by silencing his voice, they could stay the fulfillment of his word. In the face of the calamity, they continued to stand firm in their idolatry. Thus they were adding unto the guilt that had brought the judgments of heaven upon the land. For stricken Israel, there was but one remedy, a turning away from the sins that had brought upon them the chastening hand of the Almighty, and a turning unto the Yahweh with the full purpose of the heart unto them had been given the assurance, if I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, My people which shall call by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. Then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:13-14. It was to bring to pass this blessed result that the Elohim continued to withhold from them the dew and the rain until a decided reformation should take place. Same thing today among the Adventist church. The voice of the stern rebuke. For a time Elijah remained hidden in the mountains by the brook Cherith. There for many months he was miraculously provided with the food. This is chapter 10 now. We're on page 129. Later on, when the cause of the continued drought, the brook became dry, Yahweh bade his servant find refuge in a heathen land. Arise, he bade him, get thee unto Zarephath, known in the New Testament times as the Sarepta, which belongeth unto Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. This woman was not an Israelite. She had never had the privileges and blessings that the chosen people of Yahweh had enjoyed. But she was a believer in the true Yahweh and had walked in all the light that was shining on her pathway. And now, when there was no safety for Elijah in the land of Israel, Yahweh sent him unto this woman to find an asylum in her home. So he arose and went to Zarephath, and when he came unto the gate of the city, behold, a widow woman was there gathering a stick. And he called on her and said, fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel, that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called unto her and said, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. In this poverty-stricken home, the famine pressed sore, and the pitifully meager fare seemed about to fail. The coming of Elijah on the very day when the widow feared that she must give up the struggle to sustain life tested to the utmost her faith in the power of the living Elohim to provide for her necessity. But even in her dire extremity, she bore witness unto her faith by compliance with the request of the stranger who was asking her to share her last morsel with him. In response unto the Elijah's request for food and drink, the widow said, as Yahweh thy Elohim liveth, I have not a cake but a handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. Elijah said unto her, fear not, go and do as thou hast said. But make me thereof a little cake first, and bring it unto me, and after make for thee and for thy son. For thus saith Yahweh Elohim of Israel, the barrel of the meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail until the day that the Yahweh sent his rain upon the earth. No greater test of faith than this could have been required. The widow had hitherto treated all strangers with kindness and liberality. Now, regardless of the suffering that might result unto herself and the child, and entrusting the Yahweh of Israel to supply her every need, she met this supreme test of the hospitality by doing according unto the saying of Elijah. Wonderful was the hospitality shown unto Elohim's prophet by this Phoenician woman, and wonderfully were her faith and generosity rewarded. She and he and her house did eat many days. And the bread of the meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of the oil fail, according to the word of Yahweh, which he spake by the Elijah. And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick, and his naked sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him. And he said unto Elijah, what have I to do with thee, O thou man of Yahweh? Art thou come unto me to call my sin unto remembrance, and to slay my son? And he said unto her, give me thy son. And he took him out of her bosom and carried him up into a loft, where he abode and laid him upon his own bed. And he stretched upon himself upon the child three times and cried on Yahweh. And Yahweh heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came unto him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down out of the chamber into the house and delivered him unto his mother. And Elijah said, See, thy son liveth. And the woman said unto Elijah, Now by this I know that thou art a man of Yahweh, and that the word of Yahweh in thy mouth is of the truth. The widow of Zarephath shared her morsel with Elijah, and in return her life and that of her son was preserved, and unto all who in time of the trial and want give sympathy and assistance unto others more needy. Yahweh has promised great blessing. He has not changed. His power is no less now than in the days of the Elijah. No less sure now than when spoken by our Savior is a promise. He that receiveth the prophet in the name of the prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. Matthew 10:41. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Hebrews 13:2. These words have lost none of their force through the lapse of the time. Our Heavenly Father still continues to place in the pathway of His children opportunities that are blessings in the disguise. And those who improve these opportunities find great joy. If thou draw out thy soul unto the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in the obscurity and thy darkness be as the noonday. And the Yahweh shall guide thee continually and satisfy thy soul in the drought and make fat thy bones. And thou shalt be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. Isaiah 58:10-11. Unto his faithful servant today Yahshua says, He that receiveth you receiveth me, and he that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me. No act of the kindness shown in his name will fail to be recognized and rewarded. And in the same tender recognition, Yahshua includes even the feeblest and the lowliest of the family of Yahweh. Whosoever shall give to drink, he says unto one of these little ones, those who are as the children in their faith and in their knowledge of the Yahshua, a cup of cold water only in the name of the disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Matthew 10:40-42. Through the long years of the drought and famine, Elijah prayed earnestly that the hearts of Israel might be turned from the idolatry unto the allegiance unto Yahweh. Patiently the prophet waited while the hand of Yahweh rested heavily upon the stricken land. As he saw evidences of suffering and want multiplying on every side, his heart was wrung with the sorrow, and he longed for the power to bring about a reformation quickly. But Elihan himself was working out his plan, and all that his servant could do was to pray on in the faith and await the time for the decided action. For the apostasy prevailing in Ahab's day was the result of the many years of evil doing. Step by step, year after year, Israel had been departing from the right way. For the generations after generation, they had refused to make straight paths for their feet. And at last, a great majority of the people had yielded themselves unto the leadership of the powers of the darkness. About a century had passed since, under the rulership of the King David, Israel had joyfully united in chanting hymns of praise unto the Most High, and the recognition of their entire dependence on Him for their daily mercies. Listen unto their words of the adoration, and then, then they sang, O Yahweh, of our salvation, thou makest the outgoings of the morning and evening to rejoice. Thou visited the earth and watered it. Thou greatly enrichest it with the river of Yahweh, which is full of the water. Thou preparest them corn when thou hast not so provided for it. Thou waterest the ridges whereof abundantly. Thou causest rain to descend into the furrows thereof. Thou makest the softest showers. Thou blessest the springing thereof. Thou crownest the year with thy goodness, and thy paths drop fatness. They drop upon the pastures of the wilderness, and the little hills rejoice on every side. Their pastures are clothed with the flocks, their valleys also are covered with the corn. They shout for joy, they also sing, Psalm 65, 5, 8, and 13 margin. Israel had then recognized Elohim as the one who laid the foundations of the earth, and the expression of their faith they had sung. Thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. The water stood above the mountain. At thy rebuke they fled. At the voice of thy thunder they hasted away. They go up by the mountains. They go down by the valleys unto the place which thou hast founded for them. Thou hast set a bound that they may not pass over, that they turn not again to cover the earth. Psalms 104, 5-9. It is by the mighty power of the Infinite One that the elements of the nature on the earth and sea and sky are kept within the bound. And these elements He uses for the happiness of His creature. His good treasure is freely expended to give the rain in His season and to bless all the work of the man's hands. Deuteronomy 28:12. He sendeth the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. They give drink unto every beast of the field. The wild asses quench their thirst. By them all the fowls of heaven have their habitation, of which sing among the branches. He caused the grass to grow for the cattle, an herb for the service of man, that he may bring forth food out of the earth, a wine that maketh glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengtheneth man's heart. O Yahweh, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. So is this great and wide sea, wherein are things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts. These wait upon all upon thee, that thou mayest give them their meat in the due season, that thou givest them of thy they gather. Thou openest thine hand, they are filled with good. Psalm 104, 10-15, 24-28. Israel had had abundant occasion for the rejoicing. The land unto which Yahweh had brought them was a land flowing with the milk and honey. During the wilderness wandering, Elohim had assured them that He was guiding them unto a country where they need never suffer for the lack of rain. The land whether thou goest in to possess it, He had told them, is not as the land of Egypt from whence you came out, where thou sowest thy seed and waterest it with thy foot as a garden of earth, but the land whither you go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys and drinketh water of the rain of heaven, a land which Yahweh the Elohim careth for. The eyes of Yahweh the Elohim are always upon it from the beginning of the year, even unto the end of the year. The promise of the abundance of rain had been given on condition of the obedience. It shall come to pass that Yahweh had declared, if you shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Yahweh, your Elohim, and to serve Him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in His due season. The first rain and the latter rain that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed unto yourselves. Yahweh had admonished His people that your heart be not deceived and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Yahweh's wrath be kindled against you, and He shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless you perish quickly from off the good land which the Yahweh giveth thee. Deuteronomy 11:10-17. If thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Yahweh, thy Elohim, to observe, to do all His commandments and His statutes, the Israelites have been warned. Thy heaven that is over thy head shall be brass, and the earth that is under thee shall be iron. Yahweh shall make the rain of thy land powder and dust. From heaven shall it come down upon thee until thou be destroyed. Deuteronomy 28:15, 23-24. These were among the wise counsels of the Yahweh unto the ancient Israel. Lay up For these are my words in your heart and in your soul. He had commanded his chosen people, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall teach them, your children, speaking of them, when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Deuteronomy 11:18-19. Plain were these commands, yet as the centuries passed, and generation after generation lost sight of the provisions made for their spiritual welfare, the ruinous influences of the apostasy threatened to sweep aside every barrier of the divine grace. Thus it had come to pass that the Elohim was now visiting his people with the severest of his judgments, for the prediction of the Elijah was meeting with a terrible fulfillment. For 3 years, the messenger of the woe was sought for in the city after the city and nation after nation. As the mandate of the Ahab, many rulers had given their oath of the honor that the strange prophet could not be found in their dominions. Yet the search was continued for Jezebel and the prophets of Baal. Hated Elijah with a deadly hatred, and they spared no effort to bring him within reach of their power. And still there was no rain. At last, after many days, the word of Yahweh came unto Elijah, "Go show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth." In the obedience unto the command, Elijah went to show himself unto the Ahab about the time that the prophet set forth on his journey to Samaria. Ahab had proposed to Obadiah, the governor of his household, that they make thorough search for the springs and brooks of the water in the hope of finding pasture for their starving flocks and herds. Even in the royal court, the effect of the long continued drought was keenly felt, for the king, deeply concerned over the outlook for his household, decided to unite personally with his servant in a search for some favorite spots where pasture might be had. So they divided the land between them to pass through it. Ahab went one way by himself, and Obadiah went another way by himself. As Obadiah was in the way, behold, Elijah met him, and he knew him, and fell on his face, and said, "Art thou that my master Elijah?" During the apostasy of Israel, Obadiah had remained faithful. His master, the king, had been unable to turn him from his allegiance unto the living Elohim. Now he was honored with a commission from Elijah, who said, "Go tell thy master, behold, Elijah is here." This brings in verse 10, this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Have thine own way, Yahweh.
Have thine own way, Yah. Have thine own way. Thou art the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will. I am waiting, yielded and still. Have thine own way, Yah. Have thine own way. Search me and try me, Master, today. Whiter than snow, Yah, wash me just now. In thy presence, humbly I bow. Have thine own way, Yah, have thine own way. Wounded and weary, help me, I pray. Power, all power, surely is thine. Touch me and heal me, utter divine. Have thine own way, Yah, have thine own way. Hold on my being, absolute sway. Fill with thy spirit, till I shall see. That's where I'm holding, always living in thee.